This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills, and also by Springer Mountain Farms, over 300 family farms raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Learn more at biggreenegg.com and springermountainfarms.com.
The Heritage Radio Network. We are broadcasting live from the Charleston Wine and Food Festival. We are coming to you from the Culinary Village. We are in the Heritage Radio Network teepee. We're in the teepee. And today we have an incredible lineup of guests. We have some real great people. And I'm going to give everybody a quick intro and then we're going to get into it. Matt Tunstall is proprietor of Stems and Skins in Park Circle, which is in North Charleston. It's a neighborhood bar serving wine, cocktails, and beers from around the world. Matt also spent 4 years as a sommelier with Sean Brock at Husk. So Matt kind of knows the ins and outs of the Charleston market. We have one of the great California winemakers, Robert Sinski. He's the proprietor of Robert Sinski Vineyards in Napa, California. Robert's winery is a whole farm philosophy, producing non-interventionalist wines since 1991. We have Blake Hartwick. Blake is the executive chef at Bonterra Restaurant in Charlotte, North Carolina. Blake is bringing a new take on Southern cuisine and his love of local fresh flavors. And we're waiting for Carrie Bringle, who's making his way over here. Carrie is a Nashville native, and he's proprietor and pitmaster of Peg Leg Porker in Nashville. Welcome, everybody, to the Heritage Radio Network. And welcome to our Charleston Food and Wine Culinary Village set of shows. All right, so our friend Robert Sinski brought 5 bottles of wine for us to drink, which we will drink on the panel during the course of the show. So you may sense towards the end a little less focus, but that's okay. So Robert, tell us just quickly what we have in front of us.
All right, we have a few of my wines, starting with a Vangria Pinot Noir, a nice rosé, whole cluster pressed Pinot Noir. This is going to be the killer barbecue wine right here. Always gets you in trouble. Abraxas is a Vin de Tahoir white. It's a blend of Riesling, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, and Gewurztraminer. Nice little spice in the backbone to hold up to some of the spice in the food. Orja, which is a skin contact Pinot Gris. My Los Carneros Pinot Noir and a wine called POV for Point of View, and it is a Merlot Cabernet Franc-based blend.
All right, so these wines are all estate-grown grapes.
We planted every vine for
everyone.
Robert
himself grows it. He doesn't contract.
Correct.
And you vint them. You are the winemaker along with another winemaker.
Yeah, Jeff Vernig and I have been working together for 30 years.
Right. And these, just for our audience, these wines are, depending on which bottle, are readily available at restaurants, stores?
The ones that you would most see around here would be the Abraxas, the Pinot Noir, and the POV.
Okay. Now, Matt, Matt's our other resident wine guy. Matt was a sommelier. Matt said, screw this. I'm leaving sort of the mainstream restaurant business. And Matt opened up his own wine bar called Stems and Skins in northern Charleston. Kind of moved up a little. So first, let's talk about the area. What's going on in the area and why you moved sort of out of Charleston?
Downtown. Park Circle was real attractive in a couple reasons. I'll kind of give you the quick story of how it kind of organically happened. But we had looked downtown. I'd been downtown for years and were just kind of getting doors shut every time we were trying to get something moving as far as like rent and getting a space and these and things like that. I had a friend who lives up there. I've been buying a lot of wine from, works for a local distributor, and he mentioned his neighborhood. And the day we went up there, this is a couple years ago now, we knew that that was our spot. It's a tight little neighborhood. It's well-defined. There's lots of young and families and artists and musicians and things on those lines. Got a great vibe to it. It's a little bit outside of the downtown area. And we just really felt like that was home right off the rip. Now, I wanted to make a change from serving all the tourists and visitors to the city in order to serve the community and be a little bit more part of the community.
And you became selective and you focused your offerings and the type of wines you have. Talk about, you know, what you're concentrating on and what you're serving there.
Yeah, so it's a wine-focused bar with about 200 wines on the list, maybe 20 to 25 wines per evening by the glass. But there also is cocktails and beer because I wanted everybody to feel comfortable no matter what kind of mood you were in. But the wine focus is wines that I'm really passionate about. These are wines that are small growers from all over the world. I pay a lot of attention to importers who are searching out young and new people that are kind of redefining their neighborhoods from all over the world. Wines that are unmanipulated for the most part, they're fresh and exciting and have energy and taste like where they're from.
So when a bar restaurant says we have about 200 different wines,
right,
that rotates and shifts. Right? Seasonally.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Change winemakers, taste, and all that.
By the glass will definitely shift on a seasonal aspect, like bulking up rosé in this time of year, things along those lines, bulking up bubbles and things like that in our high climate, and make sure those plenty of, like, you know, refreshing aspects and a little bit deeper, richer kind of wines for the fall and the winter, but it doesn't get that cold here.
Cool.
The wines by the bottle, I really try to focus on world-class vineyards, world-class winemakers, people that, again, like, define their neighborhoods.
Great. Mm-hmm. So, Blake, you're here from Charlotte, North Carolina. You've been at Bonterra for a while, right? 15, 17 years?
Yep. It's been 16 years.
Wow. And I said earlier that you're bringing a new take on Southern cuisine and the love of local fresh flavors. I mean, translate that for us. I mean, what are you actually doing?
Well, this young gentleman next to me, he's spent some time in Charlotte. And
was he a NASCAR driver?
Well, that's the point that I'm getting to is that Charlotte is known for a big banking town or NASCAR and or just kind of being a steakhouse, you know, a Ruth Chris or a place like that, you
right.
know, where you have the power dinners and all the bankers. And we kind of fall in the same line of his old place, kind of like Husk. And that's what I've done. I've worked in old Southern homes, and, you know, we try to do as much as we can during the year with, you
right.
know, with our farmers, too. We have a lot of farmers now. We have three huge farmers markets in Charlotte, so it's opened up a lot of doors. Yeah.
So a lot more options than you had years ago.
Yeah, we have
you
a great...
shop the farmers market versus
yeah.
suppliers and all
well,
that.
Well, we have a great... it's called Piedmont Culinary Guild. So it's farmers, chefs, restaurateurs. It's kind of a all-in private page, but it's really helpful. It's there's a big brotherhood in Charlotte.
Now the restaurant has a fairly heavy focus on wine.
You could say that.
I mean,
yeah.
there's a big cellar, a lot of offerings, and
yeah,
you're cooking to that too, right? I mean, when you have that kind of wine list, you want to complement the food, not specifically.
Right.
But your collection should mirror what type of food.
Right, exactly. we've always done 100 red by the glass, 100 white by the glass.
100 red by the glass?
Uh-huh, yep.
All right, Matt just got up and left. Wait, 100 red by the glass and 100 white?
Yes, sir.
And you do 200 bottles?
Yeah, he's
all right,
got,
I'm
he's
excusing
got
you. No,
he's
no.
got me good.
Okay.
Matt's been there before. Where the bar is where the altar used to be in the church, so it fits
What's
perfect.
What's the focus? Is it California? Is it French, Italian? Is it a little of everything?
I would say more Californian, and then
that's what the market wants.
Yeah, we do a lot of we do have a good Spanish portfolio, and then French. Yeah, I would say they kind of go neck and neck, but more
nice.
California driven.
Nice. And we have Carrie Bringle. Carrie's a Nashville native. Carrie is one of the great barbecue pitmasters in the United States. And Carrie owns a place in Nashville called the Peg Leg Porker.
That's right.
And I know you've been asked this a million times, but you have to assume.
Right.
There are people that don't know you, have not heard about you. You named your place Peg Leg Porker because?
I literally am the Peg Leg Porker. I've got one leg.
And what happened?
Lost my leg to a vicious otter attack on Pickwick Lake. Everybody thinks those otters are cute and cuddly. We got
rid of them otters.
They're laying
right?
on their back. They're busting those muscles on their stomach. They look like they're cute. Don't cross them. They're all mean right. as shit. They bit me in the leg. So gangrene set in. That was the last I saw of my leg. It was terrible.
Robert brought five bottles of wine. If I told you that, I'm not giving you any more wine until you tell me the truth. Will you tell me the truth?
I did. Listen, this wine is great. Thank you. I'm enjoying some wine right now. I had bone cancer when I was 17, and that's how I actually lost my leg. Other than the vicious otter attack, that's how I really lost my leg.
I'm not a big otter fan anymore after that story.
They're mean as shit. They're terrible. All
right, so I want to ask you a question, and this question is more for me.
All right.
But I'm sure everyone on this group here, our panel, could help.
Yeah.
Give me some quick tips and advice on how to be an amateur pitmaster. Like, you're talking about a guy who just has a web we're not doing or we should be doing just to sort of get it right.
You know, barbecue is not rocket science. People...
Have you tasted anything I've made?
Yeah.
Tastes like rocket fuel.
People get all worked up about it. They really, all it is time and temperature. So what I would say is, one, give yourself enough time.
Okay, don't rush
it. And two, make sure that you take it to the right temperature. So in order for a butt or a shoulder or
when
a whole
When you say
hog,
temperature, be more specific. Cooking temperature?
Internal temperature of the meat. So you can cook it. We usually tell you to keep the pit at between 200 or 220. You can take it up to 250. That's no big deal. But the internal temperature of the meat, in order for barbecue to pull, for you to be able to pull it apart, the internal temperature has to reach 192. And a lot of people don't understand that. They wonder what they're doing wrong. It's just basic science in the fact that at 192 degrees, the connective tissue, the sinew, the fat renders out and makes you able to pull that barbecue. At 160 degrees, it will stall. So you'll go up, 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 up. You'll hit 160. It'll plateau and stall for about 2 hours. Don't raise the temperature of your pit. Don't change anything.
That's okay when it stalls?
It's okay. It's going to stall. It's just the science of the meat.
So you shouldn't freak out and turn the heat up?
Don't freak out. Don't turn the heat up. Keep it going, and then it'll pop. It'll bust that stall. It'll pop back up. Don't take it off until it's 192 degrees. And then it will pull, and then it will, you can, then it's pulled pork. If you take it off before 192 degrees, you can slice it or you can chop it. Oh, people ask me all the time. They're like, how long should I cook it?
It varies.
You know what I tell them? Until it's done. I mean,
do you use a thermometer?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So, you know, You don't have to use a thermometer, and a lot of people will say, oh, don't use a thermometer, you can do it by feel. That's great, you can do it by feel. We say poke it, and if it feels like a fat girl, it's done, all right? You know, so if it's got a lot of push to it, it's a fat boy, my bad, I don't want to offend anybody, fat boy or girl, poke it. I would say use a thermometer.
Okay.
I've been cooking for 30 years, and a lot of pit masters will say, well, I just do it by feel. Let me tell you something. There's no substitute for a thermometer, and the actual science of the
right.
meat tells you that at 192, it will render apart, and it will pull. So use a thermometer.
Be patient. Use a thermometer.
Absolutely.
And get to that temperature.
Yes.
All right, so I have Matt and Robert here who can help me with pairings. So let's talk about barbecue. If we had to take a consensus, what's the most popular barbecue? Is it brisket? Is it ribs? Let's pick one thing.
You know, brisket is the holy grail.
Okay, so let's talk about wines.
Not
pair
South Carolina. Hold on,
South Carolina, you're not from, a different ballgame.
That's not from Tennessee.
All right, fist fight.
Sorry.
Well, of course I'm from Northern California.
I love brisket, but in Tennessee it's pork or it's nothing.
All right. South Carolina.
All right, but we're gonna go with brisket. All right. So let's Matt and Robert. Let's talk about wines, the type of wines. Let's get specific. What? So you're out back barbecuing. You're gonna pull some wines out. Pair them with the briskets. What would go well?
Well,
and let's be interesting.
You start with beer.
Start with beer always. Bourbon.
Cooking process always involves lots of beer.
Right. Then you got to move to sake and maybe some cider before you get to the wine.
All right. Now let's get to the wine.
I have had a lot of fun since I've lived here the past 7 or 8 years and working with restaurants at a lot of barbecue and things like that. My hands-down favorite is like Grand Cru Alsatian Pinot Gris.
Really?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Power, residual sugar, minerality, the whole
bit. That's a good call. What about you?
Well, you know, I'm a huge fan of white wines and barbecue, particularly with pork. But when you're getting into something like brisket, I would go to a Gamay, go to a Beaujolais.
Cru Beaujolais?
Yeah. You want the acid, you want the fruit, but you don't want a lot of wood,
right.
You don't want a lot
That's
of
That's a
other...
good, fun wine. Right. It's not expensive. Right. It pairs well. Blake, what do you think? You're serving barbecue. You got to pair some wines.
I like Pinot. I like Pinot with pork barbecue. Sometimes it's depends on how. In Charlotte, we're in the middle. We have three different styles of sauces, you know. So we got like a vinegar based sauce, which is apple cider vinegar, and then we've got Western barbecue sauce, and then we start getting down the hill here a little bit. It turns to mustard. So
every one of those requires a different pairing. I mean, that's the diversity
Indeed.
Of barbecue.
Yep.
That's why I said let's pick. You know, one thing and all of that. All right, Blake, I wanted to ask you, the culinary culture in Charleston has changed, and you're right, next door, and it's sort of become a fixture on the American food scene, Charleston. It was voted by one of the magazines as one of the best cities. What do you think of that, and why Charleston? Like, why wasn't it Charlotte? Why wasn't it Boston? I mean, why is it going on here?
Well, There's been some chefs that have laid down that foundation when Johnson & Wells was here.
Was that an influencing reason, that it was literally in the backyard?
Well, I think that in the region and where it is, and a lot of people that have been a part of that as far as the food part of it, like Glenn Roberts with Anson Mills, guys like he's worked for in the past that have... They're the ones that have put Charleston on the map, hands down. There's been 5 or 6 guys that have really...
So it's always going to take people with passion and a vision. Why here?
You're right on the coast. Everything's conducive to...
So the time was ready for...
Agriculture, seafood, heirloom grains that have just been put to the wayside for so many years now that are back. And people want that. You know, when you go to farmers markets... We have three. We didn't have three 10 years ago, So
right.
I think that everybody's making that movement. People want that.
Right. So Robert Sinski brought us 5 bottles of wine. We decided to drink during the show. And for some reason, we're stalled at 1 bottle. So I think we should take a 20-second breather, chug down what we have in front of us, and let's get on to the next one, all right? So what you're hearing is wine going down my throat. All right, let's move on to the next one. All right, Matt is pouring the wine. All right, I wanted to talk to Matt and Robert about wines, and there's a common thread here, and Robert and I talked about it a little before. There's a movement in wine. It's a non-interventionist movement. It's a sustainability thing with the soil, the type of wines, the growers that buy into it. There are some terms that have been thrown around like biodynamics, organic. There's a terrible term, natural, which is way too wide and all of that. But Robert, since 1991, has practiced non-intervention you know, farming practices, a whole farming practice. And Matt is one of those guys that you walk into the bar and he has a selection of those type of wines from those growers, you know, more than anybody in the area. So, Robert, I want you to talk to me a little about what it takes, because Robert's in Napa, California, and a lot of wineries don't practice what Robert's doing. So talk to me about, you know, why you committed to it, what you're doing.
You know, that's a huge question.
It's a huge question.
You know, part of it is just doing the right thing. You know, not using toxic chemistry next to homes, not making people afraid of what they're going to consume. That was the impetus at the beginning. But then it was also about soil health. And if we're dealing with a luxury product, because let's face it, if you couldn't buy an expensive bottle of wine, you'd go buy a six-pack, no one needs a bottle of wine. So it is a luxury item. So conventional farming was created to bring produce to market at the lowest cost per unit. So it's sort of counterintuitive when it comes to wine to be using rescue chemistry when you're dealing with a luxury product.
Right.
Also, the idea of distinctiveness. We're trying to make a product that is unique to us. We're not trying to make a cookie cutter that's going to appeal to any wine critic or anything like, you know. We're not trying to hit a standard benchmark plateau. We want to make something that's distinctive for where we're growing it.
But you could do that. If you intervene or you don't intervene, you can make distinct wines.
Well, the more you share the same tools with everyone else, the more things become homogenous. When you can change the flavor profile.
What are some of those tools? Make wine?
Right. Anything from using superfoods during fermentation.
Sulfur.
Yeast. You can do a lot of things to manipulate to hit a certain flavor profile that is completely foreign to where you're growing the grapes.
Right.
And so you can deacidulate, you can make the wine fatter, you can make the wine juicier, you can make the wine woodier, you can do all these things.
That's manipulation.
That's manipulation.
You want to leave it to the terroir, the grape, you don't want to intervene,
right.
Which in the end will create the style that...
You know, you want something that is seamless, that is balanced, that is refreshing, that feels alive.
Right. And Matt, I mean, you've probably drank through as many natural wines as... Not natural, but...
I understand.
What's your feeling? I mean, the movement, since I've been doing this radio show,
there's
a huge interest, at least I've been picking up on it. There was a raw wine fair in Brooklyn for the first time.
Yeah.
There are stores dedicated. You know, you put a big slant toward it. Is the consumer asking for it? Do you feel that you have to bring it to the consumer?
I try to stay away from the verbiage and the arguments based on that term. It'll probably be going on for another 100 years, the constant back and forth. I really focus on wines that speak to me, and in turn, I try to share those with people. Over the past 15 years of kind of being a professional wine steward, I've started to lean that way. I don't necessarily love perfect wines all the time. You know, it's okay to have a little bacteria in there. It's okay to have a little VA or something that went astray in the winery every now and again.
A little funk.
Yeah, absolutely. I use the term chasing flavors at the bar a lot for wines.
Right.
And you find those little imperfections every now and again, and for the most part, I embrace them. Now, there's winemakers and wineries that use that terminology, and the wines are undrinkable. And that happens too. But there's also little imperfections that happen all throughout these wines that I truly embrace. They give a little bit different flavor. And a lot of times I think they speak of the neighborhood.
And you Robert, are you going to say something?
You know, sometimes flaws are character.
Right.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we are all flawed as human beings.
Right.
That's what defines us.
Right. If you go after that perfect wine, it gets homogenous, like you said, and boring.
Absolutely.
So you could pick up any of Robert's wines and you'll get a very good example of wines that are, you know, sustainably grown with a lot of care. And if you go up to Matt's place, you'll have a choice. Now, Carrie, I wanted to ask you something. My friend Kat at Heritage gave me this suggested question, and I think it's a good one.
All right.
In the past year, with the elections and everything, there's just been this whole nationalist, populist American movement.
Right.
And I think barbecue and jazz are truly American products.
Right, right.
And I think barbecue
I'd say blues and soul.
Yeah. But, you know, we could probably sit here right. for another yeah. hour right, yeah. and, like, you know, yeah, Fort Edsel's, whatever. But barbecue is truly an iconic American thing. What do we have to do to protect that or keep it, you know, the way it is? I mean, I think if you look in Charleston alone, the proliferation of barbecue places, how do you feel about that?
Well, so Charleston has got some great barbecue places. We were at Home Team last night. Now you've got Lewis's.
Were you
Texas
eating
barbecue.
Or cooking with them?
Well, they're close friends of mine. We were preparing some food for today and also eating with them. And Lewis is literally at their back door. My good friend Rodney Scott just opened up in town.
Whole Hog Barbecue.
Yeah. So you've got a lot of great barbecue here in Charleston. There's a lot of great barbecue throughout the country. Barbecue has experienced a great renaissance in the last 5 years.
Is it as short as 5 years? Like there's been a big spurt in five years?
Yeah, I'd say in 5 years there's been a big spurt. Barbecue's been around. It is America's food. It is our native food. People get caught up, and writers get caught up in telling you what's great barbecue, what's truly barbecue, how it has to be cooked. You know, it's bullshit. I tell these writers, I tell these writers, stop telling people how barbecue has to be cooked. What hits your plate? What's great? I mean, and probably like the winemakers that were sitting here today, don't tell me how your wine is made. Tell me what hits your glass and what right. you appreciate and what's great.
Right.
Same with barbecue. Eat what you like. You know, we do what we call real Tennessee barbecue at my restaurant, which is only pork and chicken. We don't do any brisket. We say if you want brisket, go to Texas. You know, there's a lot of great folks in Tennessee doing
what,
great
what
brisket.
What happens if a guy comes in and asks for brisket? You don't, like, lay
we
him out,
We tell him to go
you?
To Texas. We tell him to go to Texas.
We go to Texas. Like this. Get out of here.
We've got a lot of great pit masters in the state of Tennessee that are cooking a lot of great barbecue. Some of them cook great brisket. I don't want to tell you how great barbecue has to be cooked. What I want to tell you is eat what you enjoy, drink what you enjoy. We also own a spirits company, and people will tell me all the time, they're like, well, you have to have that bourbon not on the rocks, straight up. That's the only way to drink it. And I look at them and I say, I literally own a spirits company.
That's right. I wanted to talk to you about that.
I will drink that shit any way I damn well please.
Can we say you're the only pit master that has created his own brand of bourbon?
Yes, yes.
And tell us a little about that.
Well, we've got Peg Leg Porker Tennessee Straight Bourbon. We're a non-distilling producer, so we don't make any qualms about the fact that we buy bourbon from another producer. We bring it in. We burn down hickory charcoal, and then we filter that bourbon through hickory charcoal after it's debarreled. So it's not the Lincoln County process, which creates Tennessee whiskey. When you go through hickory charcoal before it's barreled, after we debarrel it, we're running through hickory charcoal and finishing the bourbon, and that's what we have for Peg Leg Porker Tennessee Straight Bourbon.
Where is it readily available?
It's
like, can I get it up in New York? Is it available in Charleston?
It's across the state of Tennessee, and it's also in New York City.
Okay.
It's not available in Charleston. It's not available anywhere else.
All right, so I'm going to have to go to, like, your car trunk and steal a few bottles or something, right?
But again, drink it the way that you like it. People want to tell you how to drink something or how to, you know, people love to say on the barbecue, don't put sauce on it, do what, you know, this and that. We serve dry ribs. That's our specialty. You know what? When I eat dry ribs, I like to dip them in sauce. That's the way I like to eat them.
Whatever you want.
I've got diehard fans that won't dip them in sauce at all. They just want them dry.
Right.
You need to do what you love to do. and enjoy it the way that you love to enjoy it. Same with wine, same with bourbon, same with barbecue. Too many people get caught up that are not producers, that are not pit masters, they're not winemakers.
We call that
master
know-it-alls.
Distillers.
Yeah.
And they like to tell everybody how they have to do it. And it is the bane of our existence. It is terrible.
So the prospects of American barbecue as an icon is here to stay for good, and we're on a growth spurt.
You know, barbecue is an American institution.
It is.
It's here to stay.
It is.
It's not a fad. It's not a, you know, it's not a passing. People are always going to eat good barbecue.
The lines will help.
Blake, I'm a foodie and a restaurant guy, and I always wonder, guys like you, young guy, been in the business a long time, how do you stay relevant as a chef? How do you stay relevant as a restaurant? How do you get people coming back? I mean, beyond the obvious things, good service, good wine list. I mean, what do you got to do, like, year in, year out, where, you know, you're the guy in Charlotte and all that?
Well, excuse me. I think, you know, we're pretty fortunate with being around for so long. We come to, you know, Charleston Wine and Food, or, you know, we do a good bit of traveling throughout the year, so that helps. You know, we get to go out and go to great restaurants and see, you know, what other places are doing throughout the country. It's always fun. We were just out in Houston for the Super Bowl, so that's a big influx of, you know, Tex-Mex.
So you're open to change?
Yeah.
See what's happening, all of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like while we're all sitting together, it's whatever you like and what you enjoy tasting, you put that into your own bucket, you know, and make it work.
Because you've had a pretty good run, and, you know, that doesn't come casually.
No,
so
we've been very lucky.
You got to be
any restaurant
right.
That's been open for that amount of years.
Yeah.
We're super fortunate.
All right, so I want to do a couple of things. I want to talk about you guys and why you're here and what you're doing. So I'm going to go around quickly, and then on my show, The Grape Nation, we do a thing called the Wine List, where we ask you a bunch of questions about your preferences, and I'm very curious, you know, what you guys would answer. So we're going to start with Carrie. Carrie is down at the Wine and Food Festival. He's doing a thing called Hams and Half Shells. That's tomorrow, Saturday,
right,
with Holy City Hogs. And on Sunday, a bunch of barbecue guys get together and do an event called Toasted. So that must be like taking LSD and walking through like a barbecue pit or something.
It's awesome.
Right?
Yeah, Toasted.
Yeah.
Toasted on Sunday night is a wrap-up event. Unfortunately, a lot of our friends all fly out on Sunday. But it's great because it's mainly local folks.
Cool.
And so it's a great event, yeah.
And then Blake, you are at the Pinot event, which is a very large Pinot tasting. Are you there, Robert? And Robert is there, too. So you're doing Pinot Parade. That is, when is that? That's Saturday, March 4th.
Yep.
That's at the Aiken House, which is on King Street. So that's an opportunity to pair up with some great Pinot makers like Robert and some other people and some good chefs. So you're going to be putting some food out, complimenting and all of that? Or
we sure are. I'm doing a little chicken liver mousse with some goodies kind of paired with that, yeah.
Cool. And then let's see, what else? Robert, you did something yesterday. And tonight, Robert's going to be at the Oak Steakhouse Signature Dinner, which is Jeremiah Bacon, who's a very highly recognized chef in Charleston. And you're going to be pairing wines in that steakhouse environment,
correct,
right?
Yep.
And Matt has Stems and Skins in North Charleston. And tomorrow, Saturday, you're doing Cured and Fermented. And I've been to your place, and there's like a big ham line in the an Iberico ham line in the middle of the bar. So I'm guessing you're going to pair wines. Tell me about what you're doing.
I wanted to focus on, at the bar we have a tagline called Fresh and Freaky Ferments. So trying to carry fermentation from all the beverage side into the food side. So we wanted to focus on having winemakers come in and talk about the fermentation process more so of wines, so cool. People could understand that. And then also having a charcuterie house from Atlanta called Spotted Trotter, which make a great product. We go through a lot of their stuff at the bar.
Nice.
Some of the chefs coming from there to talk about fermentation in cured meats and things along those lines.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, Robert, Jeremiah is probably going to, for the main course, put out some big, juicy, red, bloody steak, I'm guessing. What's the wine that goes with that?
You asked me a really tough question.
What?
It's either our Stags Leap District Cabernet Sauvignon or right. our Marcienne, which is a Merlot Cabernet Franc Cabernet Sauvignon blend from the Carneros.
And are you going to be serving that?
I hope so.
Okay. Great. Well, yeah.
You weren't supposed to ask me tough questions.
Oh, stop it. All right. So we want to pour a little more wine. So let's get to the next wine. I invite everyone within a 20-foot radius to come up here and start pouring wine. The first guy up was Dave, my engineer, who's very used to drinking wine.
Good.
Okay. And what I want to do, quickly is I want you guys, before we wrap up, we do a thing called the wine list. We ask our guests a series of questions. And what I want you to do is don't overthink this. Ask them quick. It's kind of like a lightning round, all right? So here's the question. First question, what are you drinking now? And when I ask you that, it's like, what's kind of interesting to you? What's hot? What's on the table? Wasn't there a month ago?
Sake.
Sake?
Sake.
Great answer. Matt, what are you drinking now?
Chenin Blanc.
Chenin Blanc? Okay. Blake, could be beer, could be, you know, Robert said sake.
Bourbon.
Bourbon. All right. This is Carrie Bringle. I drink bourbon. All right, Carrie, you go.
You know, I love bourbon. Okay. We've got our own bourbon. But right.
I wasn't too far off.
Lately, I've been fixated on sparkling wines and sparkling rosés.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Lambrusco,
Lambrusco is the most underrated hot pizza wine and all that stuff. We love that.
I mean, that is what I'm all about lately. If I'm drinking wine, I want a sparkling wine. I want a cava or a
great,
Lambrusco.
Great answers. All right. Back to Robert.
I will say... Pinot would be my first choice, then bourbon, then Pinot again, then
all right,
bourbon.
You didn't have to answer wine. It doesn't matter. You know, Robert's not sitting there saying, oh, I said sake. Maybe I should give him a wine. Sake's the answer. All right. So favorite wine and food pairing, something you go back to more than anything else?
Pinot Noir and Little Birds.
Good one. Pinot Noir and poultry and fowl is very popular.
Yeah, quail.
Quail.
Like salty-ass coastal wines and octopus.
Okay, that's a good one. Coastal wines from like France or anywhere?
Mediterranean Islands.
Mediterranean. Yeah. Good one. Blake?
Probably fried chicken, like Springer chicken with, I'd probably eat rosé or Pinot
that's
or
a
bourbon.
Good one.
Or all three.
This is Blake. I like bourbon and pulled pork. All right, Blake, you go.
I can't say what's on my mind.
Just answer the question.
NSF, you know. No, I love steak and red wine.
That's a good one.
Cabernet, Zinfandel, love it. With a good, great rare steak.
I would say the two classic pairings are steak and red wine and champagne and or Muscadet and oysters and all that.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. I'm interested in this one. I want to know your favorite wine restaurant and or bar. So you do Nashville, you do Charlotte, you do Charleston, you do Napa. So we'll go backwards. Blake, outside of Peg Leg Porker. Confusing you?
Yeah.
Carrie, outside of your restaurant.
I spit on myself, sorry.
That's all right. The wine is working.
Outside of Peg Leg Pork, what do I love? I love, there's a lot of great restaurants in Nashville.
But I'm looking for a slant towards wine, not just the food. Like if you go to Blake's place, incredible wine.
We eat almost every Sunday, we eat at Urban Grub.
Okay.
Edgar Penley's a great chef, restaurant. Jay Pennington owns it,
cool.
Great place. And great wine, great bubbly, great food.
Great. All right, Blake the chef in Charlotte. Chefs always hang out at places that people are interested in going to. What do you like? But with a slant towards wine.
I would probably say good food on Montford. They have pretty good wine list, or Barrington's.
Good experience. Good.
Yeah.
Cool.
And he's one of my good friends. He's been around as long as we have, so he's got a great wine list at Barrington's. Very small, like 40 seat.
Nice.
Small, you know, white tablecloth restaurant.
All right, Matt.
We got to
kind of stay with Charleston.
This is tough. I'm going to get in trouble from some colleagues if I don't say it.
Well, I always tell my listeners and my guests, it's a disclaimer. You won't get in trouble. This is your opinion.
Yeah, I think the people that kind of nail wine lists and food best in this town is probably guys at Charleston Place do a great job. Fig does a great job.
Rick and all those guys there.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's like a classic wine.
And has been for a long time. Institution.
Right.
Institution.
They deserve the reputation.
They sure do.
All right, Robert.
Well, you know, the Bay Area, we have an embarrassment of riches.
You really do.
And so it's a little difficult. So what I'm thinking of is who still has library wines? Because that's becoming more and more rare as time goes on. And Press up in St. Helena has an amazing library of old California wines that you don't see anymore. And I've got to.
Who's the sommelier at Press?
Miss White is
right.
Her name.
Kelly White?
Kelly White.
Kelly
correct.
White, right. I've asked this question to all my guests, and Press has come up, you know,
yeah.
2, 3, 4
yeah,
times.
Yeah, but again, there's huge. I mean, the Bay Area of Spruce, you have,
right.
You know, Shelley Lindgren, you have so many people that are doing great things.
Cool. All right, last question. I usually ask 5, but I may ask the 5th question just to Matt. Favorite all time wine? And I'm going to open it up to what's your favorite all-time wine or beer or, you know, Pappy Winkle 20, whatever. So what's the wine that had the that moving moment for you?
I would have to say the white wines of Alsace, Riesling, Weinbach spoke to me early on. But
you're right, you know, about that.
Maya Kama's Cab from the 70s. It was amazing.
Matt?
Very old Madeira, very old Sauternes.
How old on the Madeira? 1800s?
100, yeah, 100 years. Something
100
like that.
Years?
Yeah.
Still can get it?
Still? Oh, no, I don't think. Like,
it's hard to get.
Available. Hard to get, yeah.
Hard to get. Okay.
That's the most memorable one.
All right. Blake, a wine that.
What stood out in my
or
mind.
Or a drink.
Especially with wine was. I did a few stints in Spain many years ago, and drinking the old vine garnachas that they have. I have a friend, his wife is actually she has a winery there. Just looking at how it's tiered down and how the land is just incredibly difficult to work on. But that old world wine was something that I can still taste in my mind the first sip, because it's not like California wines. It's totally different.
That's a good choice. Carrie.
I'm not sophisticated enough about wine. I like Apothic Red, you know. I mean, it's just $12 wine. As far as a drink.
You know what? Apothic's not a bad $12
it's
red.
It's a great wine.
You know
as
what
far
it's
as
not
drink,
good with? A $4 steak.
Yeah.
You know?
I love Old Forester's Birthday Bourbon. It's one of the best bourbons on the market. And one
now,
of the best
is that
I've
something
had.
We could get if we look for it? Still out there?
They release it once a year. It's allocated, but it's a Old Forester Birthday Bourbon. They release it once a year. It's one of the best bourbons you'll ever have. Old Forester Birthday Bourbon.
Birthday Bourbon.
They release it once a year.
Okay.
It's an incredible bourbon.
All right, we're gonna look out for that. All right. I want to thank my guests. I want to thank Carrie Bringle from Peg Leg Porker. I want to thank Blake Hartwig from Bonterra. What's the full name? Grill and Wine Bar? What?
It's Bonterra Dining and Wine Room.
Bonterra Dining and Wine and all that. Matt Tunstall. Matt from Stem and Skins in North Charleston. And Robert Sinsky, renowned winemaker with Vineyards in the Carneros region, vineyards on your own property in
Stag's Leap,
which is that technically Napa?
Yes.
Okay. And I asked you this earlier. All the wines you make are estate grown. These are your own grapes.
Correct. But because of our government, I can't use it on my label.
Really?
So even though I planted every vine for every wine, I can't say estate grown except for my Stag's Leap district property.
Because it's contiguous to where
exactly,
you live?
Exactly.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
What about building like a little house in Carneros and going there in the summer? Can you do that?
Only if I make the wine there.
Okay. All right, listen. Thank you guys very much. Thank you for coming to the Heritage Radio Network, to our teepee in the Culinary Village, for our weekend of broadcast. We'll be back here tomorrow with a great kickoff show. At 11:15, we have Daniel Ballud, Michael Anthony, the chef of Gramercy Tavern, and Gail Simmons, who was here earlier. And then we have a full day of terrific guests. Katie, can you go online and see that, or the guests? Okay, so it's heritageradionetwork.org/Charleston. And if you're interested in tuning in, and I will be back tomorrow with Daniel, Gail, and Michael at 11:15. And then I'll also see you at 1 with a bunch of other people that I can't remember because Robert brought 4 bottles of wine. So...
Five.
So, Kat's going to be on in a few with Katie Button. We'll see you tomorrow, and thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Big Green Egg, the world's largest producer of ceramic charcoal grills. In business since 1974, they've transformed ancient cooking vessels into modern-day masterpieces. Today, they sell 7 sizes of the egg, as well as hundreds of accessories designed to make your cooking fun, entertaining, and delicious. Often copied but never equaled, the Big Green Egg is the ultimate cooking experience. Learn more at biggreenegg.com. This episode is also brought to you by Springer Mountain Farms, over 300 family farmers raising birds in Georgia's Blue Ridge Mountains. Many of them are second and even third generation. They're committed to doing things the right way. Springer was one of the first poultry companies to forego the use of antibiotics, and they've embraced other humane practices too. In fact, they were the first poultry company to earn the American Humane Association Seal of Approval. Learn more at springermountainfarms.com.